Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you live from beautiful, historic Midtown Atlanta. It's just gorgeous this time of year. You know, the trees, well, first of all, welcome the podcast people. Welcome. The trees were later than usual this year, but honestly, I don't remember them being more beautiful. They're so vivid in those deep, rich colors. Even this late in the year, they're gorgeous. So wherever you are listening to this, if you've never been to A-Town, you should check it out. I love the city. Last night we were, I went out to Ken's family's Thanksgiving. And where he works is out in Greensboro, but where his niece lives is even further out. I mean, he even got lost. We kept driving and driving. I said, where the heck are we going? And anyway, I can't believe how many deer were out, and there were dead deer in the road, and deer was about to dart out. I said, this is why people need to live in the city where it's safe. There's no deer darting out in front of your car in little 5 points. It's just some homeless guys asking you. Oh, yeah, that's out on his nephew's back porch. It's not finished yet, but it's big. They got a big fire pit, and it's cool. That's his son, Brandon, and that's his son, Nathan, and his little granddaughters. And there were more people. They were inside getting the food together eventually. We were supposed to eat at 5. We ate at 7:30, so there's that. Note to self, don't go to dinner hungry already. You'd think I would know that by now. But anyway, it was all good. Now the podcast people are saying, we can't see what you're showing there, so my apologies. I'm finishing up a series this month, the title of which is taken from the 91st Psalm, is The Secret Place of the Most High, The Manifested Miracles of the Meditative Life. And something happened yesterday. When I tell you these things, I don't think I have to convince you of my truthfulness, but there are some things that happen that they nearly sound too good to be true. And this happened yesterday, and there's no embellishment to the story, but I walked up to the Starbucks there on Peachtree that I go to some mornings. I was going to work on my outline for today, and there's a table that I like. I like to get my coffee and work on my outline. And it was just like I imagined it. The table was available and ready, and it was all good. So I was thinking about this verse of Scripture, which let me go ahead and show you. This is the 91st Psalm. Let me refer to it once again. It's Psalm 91, verse 1, and this is in the Amplified Classic. This is Moses' psalm that says, he who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall remain stable and fixed under the shadow of the Almighty, whose power no foe can withstand. I've used this verse a lot this month, but I like to look at it in different translations. I like to hold the diamond up and let the light catch the different facets. And sometimes a different translation will use a different word that will give you some insight that you didn't have before. So I'm looking at this verse of Scripture, and I'm just looking at it. I'm looking at it on my screen. I'm thinking, what more do I want to say about this? And suddenly the energy was on the word abide. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. So I was thinking about that word and what does that mean. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, oh, that's similar to the word abode. Abode is where you live. So that's how I'll end this series. I'll talk about lifestyle. Meditation is a lifestyle. It's not just going to a retreat or us if we do it here. It's something that you learn to do. You learn to breathe a certain way, and when you change the way you breathe, you change the way you process information. So, you know, all of my channels are open. You know, when I'm kind of in that mode, I'm like, okay, Spirit, what do I say? Where's the energy on this? And while I'm looking at it, the I guess you call it Muzak. No, it's not Muzak. It's the they're playing Christmas songs. So I'm looking at it, and first I hear Lena Horne sings "Little Drummer Boy." And I'm halfway looking at that, and I think, I didn't know Lena Horne covered that. It's interesting. So I'm, you know, listening to that kind of halfway, still thinking about the word abide, abide. What do I want to say about it? And I'm looking at, I go online to the lexicon, looking at the Hebrew, a lot of different shades of meaning. Even the word haunt is one of the, it's just unusual definitions, which I love words. So I'm looking at that now. It's Judy Garland singing "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." So I'm thinking, huh? I wonder if that's is that a DVD they're selling? Or those are that's got some good covers of some stuff. And you know, I love Christmas music. I just posted my playlist that's got right now has 125 songs on it. And you, I think if you have Apple Music, you can just add it to yours. So that's a lot of fun putting that together. And so I'm listening to Christmas music. And then all of a sudden, this thing happens that I've never experienced at Starbucks before. My maternal grandfather was old school Pentecostal. He only went to the third grade. He was illiterate. But he had this sort of amazing Smith Wigglesworth type John G. Lake apostolic miracles. And his gift really made room for him. He ended up going around the world. He met... I used to always hear them say he met with the King of England and the King talked to him about tithing. And so I asked my uncle about a year ago, I said, where would he have met? Who was the King of England? Who it was, you know, after Elizabeth's uncle abdicated the throne, her father became king. And they made a movie about him a couple of years ago called The King's Speech because he had a speech impediment. Well, he was in the Bahamas, and he heard about my grandfather, and he wanted to meet him. So I thought it was just something that my family made up, you know. Granddaddy met the King of England. I'm like, when was it? I mean, Elizabeth has been the queen since the 50s. Well, sure enough, he did meet him, and he wanted to ask him how he got people to give up. He was interested in tithing. How do you get people to free will give 10% of their income? So he did meet with him. So Granddaddy had this amazing kind of just unusual miracles. Like I remember my dad, you gotta give me a second, I'm feeling his presence really strong. He's just been with me a lot this week. The church where I had my first I have memories, my dad built this church that had mahogany benches, and the churches we built back then always had altars, or what they called mourner's benches. They were made out of the same kind of wood that the pews were, but it was a place where people could go kneel and pray. And this had two mahogany wood mourner's benches, and they were super heavy. Like, I remember if we ever did an event where they had to clear the space, it would take, like, six men to pick one up and move them out of the way if we did, like, a Christmas thing or something. Well, my granddaddy, who was probably 5'6", just plucky little Bantam Rooster kind of guy, he's preaching, and I remember this, I mean, because I was 4 or 5, he's preaching, and he was, like, at the just top of his lungs preaching. I'm getting back to Starbucks. I have to tell you this for this to make sense, because this was very significant. He's preaching about Samson picking up the gates, and when he does, he picks one of those things up, and you could hear a gasp from the crowd, like, "Oh my God, don't do that." And he picked it up and walked back and forth and preached about Samson. I mean, it was a sign and wonder. Everybody was just like, even at my age, I remember everybody just going. And it's nearly like when it was over with, he kind of didn't even remember it happening. All right, so I've always kind of been fascinated with his life. And he couldn't read, but my grandmother read the Bible to him so much that he actually memorized the scripture to the point that he was billed. I've seen these posters from the 30s where he was billed as the walking Bible. He would go in and quote entire chapters of the Bible. And so when I used to quote a lot, like when I would do Washed by the Word and stuff, family members would always say, "You're channeling Granddaddy." Like, that's yours. Okay. What's interesting is I never heard him say this, but in the last few years, anytime we've been together with my aunt and uncle and we've been like when Carlton Pearson comes down, we'll stand around the piano, we'll sing. My uncle or my mom will always say, let's please do Daddy's favorite hymn. And his favorite hymn was Abide With Me. Now, what's interesting about that is Abide With Me is not a Pentecostal type song. Every time they say that, I'm like, really? That was his favorite hymn? That doesn't sound like him. Now, this is kind of nuanced, so those of you that sort of don't know where I came from might not appreciate this, but the world I grew up in was loud and boisterous and tent revival and sawdust trail and a lot of clapping the hands. So we considered hymns nearly being too highbrow for us. You know what I mean? Hymns were uppity. Hymns were, you know, liturgical. We were, you know, power in the blood, victory in Jesus, you know, rock and roll. You know, I mean, gospel, I mean, gave birth to rock and roll. All those, like, Chuck Berry and Little Richard, all those guys, they all came out of gospel music. And really all that, early 50s rock and roll was just basically gospel moved up tempo with different lyrics. So I always thought that's so interesting that his favorite hymn was Abide With Me. It makes me think maybe who everybody saw that he was really wasn't who he was. That's just an unusual, I would have never thought that would have been his favorite hymn. So it's become this thing in the last few years, every time we're together, somebody will always say, in honor of Granddaddy, let's sing Abide With Me. That's not even a hymn I grew up with very much. It's a, Abide with me, fast falls the eventide. The darkness deepens, Lord, with me abide. I don't even know the lyrics to it. It wasn't in our lexicon. So I'm sitting there yesterday. I'm looking at the word about my hand to God. I'm sitting there. I hear Little Drummer Boy. Before that was What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? I think Diana Krall was singing that. I hear Judy Garland. It's all Christmas music, Christmas, Christmas. And suddenly, as I'm looking at the word abide, they start playing an instrumental of Abide With Me. I've never heard Starbucks play a hymn, and Abide With Me is not a Christmas song. So I'm thinking, what? I mean, I thought for a minute, am I imagining this? I'm looking at the word abide, I'm thinking about Granddaddy, and his song starts playing in Starbucks. So I sat there and listened to it. I thought, this is a trip. This is not just a fluke. It's not. If it had been his favorite Christmas carol, then I'd say, well, that could have happened because, you know. But no, it was Abide With Me. That has nothing to do. I looked at the lyrics online and thought, there's nothing even about the incarnation in this. So this is irrelevant to Christmas music. And when it was over, they went right into Nat King Cole singing the Christmas song. It was just this really strange moment, and I felt his presence, and I got revelation for what I want to talk about today. It was just a window opened. I'm very aware that he's, but wait, there's more. So I get my outline pretty much done. I think I got a couple more things I want to tweak, but I've been sitting here long enough. I'm gonna walk back home. Get my stuff packed up, walk back home, sit down to finish my outline. I turn on the TV, and on TCM, Turner Classic Movies, they're showing The Blob, the science fiction movie from 1958, which I've seen bits and pieces of, but I've never seen it from the beginning, so I thought, I'm interested in it. It's real kitschy, and Steve McQueen is in it, and the woman that played Andy Griffith's girlfriend, Miss Crump, she's in it, and so I'm just looking at it as an oddity, and I'm like, wow, interesting. And in the opening crowd, the opening credits, it says music by Ralph Carmichael. I thought, is that the Ralph Carmichael, who was kind of considered the father of contemporary Christian music? He's, you know, Donnie Reba worked with him for a while. Then when they went to California, they were with Light Records. And he was the one. Now, I went back and listened to it yesterday. He did this, in 1969, he did a musical called Tell It Like It Is, which was sort of the Christian version of Hair. It was very, I listened to the whole thing yesterday, and it's I can see the influence of a musical like that, because it's just, I mean, they didn't take their clothes off in it, but it's like, it's, you can just tell it's influenced by them. And so I thought, is that the Ralph Carmichael? So I Google him, and on Wikipedia, sure enough, I'm reading all this stuff about him. I'm like, what? His ex-wife married Rolf McPherson, who's the son of Amy Simmel McPherson that started the Foursquare. I'm like, I'm reading all this stuff and how that he was considered so controversial, because now you listen to this stuff and you think that was controversial. But at the time, like, he really introduced drums in churches and that kind of stuff. And not only in white churches, he's the one that he recorded The Blood Will Never Lose Its Power by Andre Crouch. And that's what skyrocketed, that took Andre Crouch out of just being in black churches and gave him a, like, international platform, and gave him a white following as well. So, and he's still alive. He was, he's born in 26, I think. I thought, did he die? What? So now I'm thinking about Ralph Carmichael. Oh, it's time to go to Eatonton. So I get in the car, plug it in. Hey, Siri, play Ralph Carmichael for me. Okay, here's Hymns by Ralph Carmichael. Abide with me. And I sat and listened to the whole four verses of it. And I thought, if I hear this a third time today, it's gonna freak me out. Am I about to go to the other side? Is granddaddy coming to get me? He's like playing his favorite, like, I've never heard this song. This song is not in my mind at all. And this is in a space of an hour's time. I've connected the dots back to this a second time, to where I'm saying, what are you, granddaddy, trying to tell me to tell them about this? And it's the word abide. You know, you hear people who came from poverty and who have a lot in their background, they don't say, I live there. They go, that's where I stay. I stay. So he stays over there. It takes a while to change your perception and say, I don't stay here. I live here. Staying somewhere. And it's kind of become a colloquialism to say, you know, where do you stay? But it came out of people who didn't really have roots. Like, they didn't live anywhere. They just, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, these are people who are running from lynchings and running from, you know, horrible stuff. So they don't live anywhere. They stay. This is where I'm staying right now. It became a big deal when people started putting down roots and saying, I'm a homeowner. I live here. I'm a part of this community. And it's still a struggle. You know, it's still for people putting down roots. It's, you know, please allow me to say this, because it makes my point. What I'm trying to tell you this month is meditation is not some trendy thing that I got us into because I was bored with traditional theology. And I'll just tell you, if you Google, like, there's so many Christian, like, fundamentalist websites that go right down the line talking about stuff that I teach. Like, this is New Age, it's Hinduism, everything from, you know, stuff that I've talked about, colors and color healing and light. You know, don't be careful, that's going to open you up to the devil. And you think, what? Why would that open you up to the devil? Why? Why would just being quiet, and I mean, really, do y'all think demons are that powerful that they're just waiting for you to shut up for them? I'm like, that's really, it's really sad. Like, I'm not even offended by it. I feel pity. Like, how do you not know better than that? So, of everything that I've said this month, and I think I've said some important things, I think 2 weeks ago was another theological turning point for us, because we talked about the name Shaddai, who lives in Shaddai's shadow, the God who says, the God who has breasts, and the God who says it's enough. So what it's saying is the God who says you can nurse for a while, but at a certain point I'm going to wean you off my breast and you become your own. There's no other way to say it. You become your own God. That was what his original purpose was. Let us make people in our image and let them be divine. The thing that's so warped and twisted about the modern evangelical church is it's adult people nursing at the breast of God. And it's wrong. We should have weaned off. We should know by now how to get it for ourselves. So when I talk about abiding, I'm not just talking about meditation. I'm talking about this has got to kick in and become a lifestyle for us. I'm not just trying to be hip, like what's the hip thing that you're into now? No, this is a lifestyle where you are settled down and you are established. You don't stay in the hood. You're a homeowner. You live, abode, abide. They're the same words. Secret place. Let me show you some scriptures. This is Psalm 91:1 in the Passion Translation. It says, when you sit enthroned under the shadow of Shaddai, you are hidden in the strength of Most High God. Let me show you this next one. This is Psalm 27:5, and I used this a couple of weeks ago about the secret of the Lord is with them that fear Him. Here in the Passion Translation, it says, in His shelter in the day of trouble, that's where you'll find me, for He hides me there in His holiness. He has smuggled me into His secret place, where I'm kept safe and secure, out of reach from all my enemies. This is such an interesting choice of words in the Hebrew. Because when you smuggle something in, it's illegal. It's contraband. You're breaking the rules. Criminals smuggle stuff. So if your relationship with God is unconventional, even to the point that you can't explain it to some people, oh, you're all New Age, or you're all this, or y'all don't even preach about the cross anymore, or whatever. You don't understand. I've been smuggled in. I've come in under the radar, and I'm not even trying to convince you of my orthodoxy, because I'm in a secret place. This thing that happened yesterday wasn't just about my grandfather. It was about, I'm reading this article about Ralph Carmichael and how everything that he did, there was church people somewhere fighting him. Whatever it was, there were some church people against it. I remember the first time I ever heard Ralph Carmichael's name was when we moved back to Atlanta in 1970, and Dad took this church over here on the corner of Ponce and Piedmont. He was the associate pastor. And the first week we were there, the people of the church called this meeting, and they brought in the youth pastor because she had a youth choir, and she was doing a song from Tell It Like It Is, and people didn't like it. Because there's a song that says, what's God like? And it says these people that they say these little raps. It's all these people, these different skewed ideas of God. And like the first one guy says, when I saw God, He had a long white beard, and He brings me gifts at the end of the year. But the big ones come in the great by and by from the Santa Claus up in the sky. You have to hear the whole thing in context. Well, these people just heard it, and they were like, she's coming in here saying that God's Santa Claus. And I remember even at my age, I'm thinking, no, y'all don't understand the context of the song. Listen to the rest of the song. All these people, when I saw God, He was in a museum. Da-da-da-da. You could go in to see Him. It was all these people thinking this crazy stuff about God. And at the end of it, this woman sings, no, you've got it all wrong. God is love. God is light. It's not a great song, but it's not at all what... I remember us driving home from church and Dad saying, we're gonna have to fire her because these people are, you know, they're so irate. And I remember they put her on, like, you can't do Ralph Carmichael music. And so mine's not about music so much, but I thought, buddy, I can totally relate to things that, well, you know who Nancy Harmon is. I remember back in the 60s, now you hear her, and she's just like a gospel singer. Oh, I remember preachers getting, that Nancy Harmon comes in there playing that rock and roll music with them electric guitars and them drums. It sounds like, you know, it sounds like savages dancing to the beat. And I remember a famous televangelist who had his own sex scandal years later. I remember him preaching that people can't listen to drums in church because it appeals to their sexual nature and it's going to make them be promiscuous. And I used to think, really, a drum beat? Just the beat, the rhythm of a drum? You know, if a drum beat's making you want to get busy, I think your problem is bigger than just the first thing you hear is drums. It's like, well, I got to get it on with somebody. Like, wow, that's an interesting transition to make. And always know when somebody's really hammering about sex sin, they got some issues. So years later, after he had not one but two sex scandals, I thought, oh, this wasn't about drums. This is about you trying to deal with your own business. But I'm saying from this word abide, this is what I took from it. Because my grandfather, you know, his father was a free will Baptist preacher. And when Granddaddy was what they call baptized in the Holy Spirit, those people in South Georgia, they thought that was of the devil. Now, they didn't lynch Pentecostal preachers like they did black men, but they would run them out of town. Granddaddy used to tell a story about they couldn't even have a church building. You had to preach in a brush arbor. Like, they would go out in the woods and fashion a place. And he, when my Aunt Myrtle and Uncle Earl were babies, that Granddaddy was in a horse and buggy with my grandmother going to preach a revival, and the men of the town met them in the little lane. It's right where my parents have grave plots down there, right there on the sandy lane with like the Frankenstein monster. Like, they have torches, and they're going to run him out of town. And his little guy gets out and just stands there, and they all break out into a fight and start beating the living daylights out of each other till they're all unconscious, and Granddaddy gets back in the horse and buggy and goes and preaches his revival. You know what that is? That's abiding. See, if you don't abide, that kind of stuff you'll just say, this is too hard. This is too difficult. You know, a homeowner thinks differently than a renter. When it's your house, you think about it differently. And you're responsible for it. So this wasn't just about, the hymn was definitely a signpost from the universe and from the other side, from the cloud of witnesses. But it's also teaching me about stay committed to what you believe is right. And don't, when somebody says, well, I like when you preach, but I don't like when you bring up that gay stuff. I'm like, what do you mean that bring up that gay stuff? Like, if I mention my husband, that's like, That's not gay stuff. That's my life. Don't let somebody shame you into, oh, I can't talk about that. No, the truth makes you free. That is my truth. Where does that come from? It comes from abiding. And where does meditation fit into that? I don't know how to explain what meditation does to you, but I'm telling you, it changes something in your cells. It changes something in your metabolism. It changes something in your DNA. I'm not schooled enough in this to explain it to you, but I know I am different from meditating, and that it's a lifestyle in that things that would have stressed me out before, even little things I was venting to y'all about, they weren't major deals. They were just like little frustrations. If you ask me, how was your Thanksgiving? I say, oh, it's fantastic. It was amazing. For me, I mean, Jonah just literally flew in from Europe to be there. And it's gotten so challenging with all four of my kids' moms and their grandparents that I to try to start that group text and try to corral them all in. A couple of weeks ago, I just said, here's what I'm doing. I'm going to Mom and Dad's house Thursday night, Thanksgiving night. If y'all can be there, that's great. If you can't, don't stress over it. I understand. Your lives are busy. And I meant it. They all showed up with girlfriends and extra friends. Even Jared even brought food. Jared said, I brought some food. I'm like, I'll take it. That was a first. And it was great. And we all took pictures. Were there some minor irritations? Yes. Was there some frustrations to it? Yes. Did I call off Thanksgiving? No, because I abide. And it's life. And those few minutes of having all of my kids with me, there's something about that synergy that I don't have if just two of them are there or if just three of them are there. It's when they're all there. Yeah, that was us going around the room and saying what we were thankful for. And to be able to easily get everybody together with all of their schedules, it's kind of like walking on water. When, you know, Mom said, well, let me know who's coming. And I said, yeah, believe it or not, they're all coming. It's like the planets lined up. How did that happen? Let me show you another scripture. This is Psalm 31:20, also in the Passion Translation. It says, so hide all your beloved ones in the sheltered secret place before your face. Overshadow them by your glory presence. Keep them from these accusations, these brutal insults of evil men. Tuck them safely away in the tabernacle where you dwell. In the King James, it says, he will keep me in the secret place of his pavilion. He will hide me from the strife of tongues. What's that got to do with meditation? Well, yesterday I needed one more quote, so I'm reading all these meditation quotes by Swamis, and they all have like long Indian names, and I try to just pepper my stuff a little bit with that, because we're coming from a Christian paradigm, so I'm not pretending like I'm Hindu, or I'm not trying to make y'all Hindu. I'm saying there are things from other belief systems that will validate what we already believe. So as I'm reading, and there's a lot of websites that have got, you know, quotes about meditation, and so much of it is about detach from your ego, detach from your thoughts, get out of your head, get out of your thoughts, get out of your feelings. And I thought, man, you know, most of the counseling I've done in 46 years of ministry is people just being obsessed with stuff they feel and who hurt their feelings and who was upset at who and church splits and, oh, Lord, just crazy stuff. Let me say it this way. Some Christians I've known in my life would have been well served to meditate a little. If it would get you out of your walking around with a chip on your shoulder and obsessing over every little infraction, every little thing, oh, my Lord. I mean, I don't know how much experience you've had with it, but church people, in like really old school church people, are some of the most trivial, unhappy, easily offended. You know, like even out in the world, good friends will love each other and go get drunk together and beat the crap out of each other, and the next day they make up. Not in church world. Oh, my God. You know, it's so funny. I look in my memories that come up in Facebook. There was a couple of today, people that don't even speak to me now, who a few years ago would say, Bishop, you threw down on that word last night. And I think, wow, it would really be passive aggressive of me to share this. Just to say, how do you like me now? But that's, I'm not even mad at them. That's just the nature of the system. Church splits. And I saw a meme this week. It was brilliant. It was, it said something about 41,000 Christian denominations can't be all wrong. And that's a trip. Over 40,000 denominations who have split over 27 books in the New Testament. I'm not just talking about Catholics versus Protestants. I mean, I've told you this before, the kind of Pentecostal that Eddie was a different planet from the Pentecostal I was. Trinitarians thought those oneness people, we were like, ooh, I don't even know if they can be saved. They're given over to reprobate minds. And you know one reason I don't miss baptizing people now? Because I got so tired of people obsessing over how you do it. That's why, I mean, I was being tongue-in-cheek when I did it, but when I used to baptize, and I baptized some of y'all, I would immerse you. I baptize you in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, in the name of Jesus, bring you up and sprinkle you. I'm like, is everybody happy now? Because this is the stuff y'all all fight over. So whichever mode you liked, I just did it. It was brilliant. I'm not sure, and this is going to sound Trumpian in its magnitude of self-aggrandizement here, but I'm not sure that my, until after I'm gone, I'm not sure people understand the effect that I've had, not on the whole world, but I've made a little ripple. I've changed the stuff because I hear from people all the time that say, you change the way that I think about God, the way I think about church, the way I think. And I mean, these are people I've never met. I think, how did I do that? I don't know. I've just watched you from afar, and you tilted my axis. You changed. You completely made me look at it from in a different way. To the point now, I'm nearly too impatient. Like, if I hear, like, I'm not a good counselor for gay people in church who are struggling with, you know, because I just want to go, it's BS. They're telling you, just, you're wasting your time. I mean, read my book if you want to, but just get out of there. But I just think they don't. No, they don't. It's a house of cards. It's nonsense. It's BS. Just leave it. Get out of it. But there might be, well, then I don't know what to tell you. I can't tell you how much I get unfriended from from gay people who say, well, you're just not compassionate. No, I'm compassionate. It's just I've had this conversation with 10,000 people, and church world is warped. It's a system that is imploding, and you can't just sit around and hope people like you. If they don't get you, you have to move on. And if you can't find a place, then create your own place and find some people that share your values and stop worrying about what people think over here because they're just wrong. There's a guy, I haven't even met him. There's a guy I'm friends with on Facebook, and he's really smart. He's a young guy. I don't even know how we became friends, but he's on Facebook every day defending his why he doesn't believe in hell. And it's fine. I've shared a couple of his things. They're like, well, that's really well said. But I'll scroll down and look at his comments, and I think, how do you have the fortitude to have this argument every day? Because after you've said all this stuff, there's still somebody that hadn't read your other stuff that says, Bible says the worm dieth not, weeping and gnashing of teeth. And you think, how many times have you got to say this? He's infinitely patient. Me, I'm just like, block. I can't. I don't have time to contend with your religious insanity. Because you're not going to change it. And this is what I learned, even back when I started doing Schools of the Bible, when I started challenging the ideas of eternal punishment, I found that people were so, it was so ingrained into their psyche that even if you explained it to them, now for people like you who were seekers, I was probably already confirming what you really believed on some level. But for people that need that moral compass of believing in literal hell, even if you explain to them from the scriptures, they'll still say, well, I still believe, you know, Hitler's in hell. So it's just a no-win argument. So now I just think, but you know what? Namaste. Believe what you want to believe. You know, if there's a hell and you don't like me, then I guess I'm going to get mine. So let me have a few days before I'm thrown into the oven. But when you're just on the other side of it, it's hard to, let me say it this way. When God has smuggled you in and you're in the secret place, it's difficult to explain to people who don't understand where you live. He who abides. How can I explain to somebody, this is where I live. I've already fought these battles. I'm not being impatient with you. You work out your own salvation. I'm just saying I already live in this space, and I love the God that I have. I'm not conflicted about it. I'm not, you know, if you throw me some Bible verses that you think challenges my theology, it doesn't even, I'm a homeowner. It doesn't move me. I'm like a tree planted by the rivers of water. Exactly. If you didn't hear what Eddie said, he said people will tell you you don't deserve to live in that house. You're already there. I already abide. Let me show you this. I just loved these verses. This is Psalm 31:20. This is in the International Standard Version. It says, "You will hide them in the secret place of your presence, away from the conspiracies of men. You will hide them in your tent, away from their contentious tongues." This is one thing that I do admire about Eastern people who have lived a meditative life. They're not, at least the ones I have encountered, they're not super touchy. They're very detached from ego. They're centered. There's something about it that I find very attractive. And I'm not converting to another religion. I'm saying I like, there's something you have, there's something in your philosophy that is missing from the people that I grew up with, who seem to be so insecure about their own belief that they just want to fight about it at the drop of a hat. Here's the thing. Once you know that you know that you know that you know something, you don't even need to fight about it. It's like, no, baby, I don't. It's not that I'm afraid of the fight. It's like, this is so settled in me, there's no fight in me. It's like Jesus saying, Satan has come to me, but there's nothing in me. Like, you can try to punch my buttons and hit all my triggers. I don't have any triggers. I've already been through this. Namaste is not a word that I say. It's a lifestyle. That which is sacred in me honors that which is sacred in you. And I'm not trying to take that away from you. Absolutely. What Jackie said is, what you're trying to convince them is because you're trying to convince yourself. Yes, exactly. Once you are convinced, there's no argument. And furthermore, you know, when Jesus said, "No man comes unless the Father draws him, no man comes to me," I don't know that you can intellectualize revelation to somebody. They either the light comes on for them for whatever reason, or it doesn't. And if they're not looking for the light, you can't intellectualize them into walking in the light. Here's one of those long names, which you just said. Thursday night, we came in from Mom and Dad's place, and that's when I pulled out the tree and I said, "Would you help me get this up at least, you know, because he won't be back till tomorrow night." I turned on, this wasn't TCM, this was on TBS. Turned on, it was the end of Wizard of Oz. They must show it on Thanksgiving. And just as I turned it on, it's when, it's the end of it, when Glinda says, "You've always had the power to go home." And Scarecrow says, "Why didn't you tell her?" And he said, "And I should have known it." And she said, "Because she wouldn't have believed it. She had to learn it for herself." And I think, man, Glinda, you better preach. Ain't that the truth? There are things that people tried to tell you 25 years ago that you just weren't ready for it. They have to. They have to learn it for themselves. This is, I like this quote. It says, "When you know that everything that is happening is only appearing on the screen of consciousness, and that you yourself are the screen on which it all appears, nothing can touch you, harm you, or make you afraid." Now, that's not in the Bible, but it ought to be. Because what that's saying is, and I'll say this, thinking correctly about aging, even today, you know, Marshall, he sang two songs about death. He starts with "I'll Fly Away," and the second one, it mentioned about coming to the end of your journey and that sort of thing. And I think, well, you know what? It's a part of the process, you know. Part of me wants to say, "Don't bring the room down. Let's, you know, give us a." And he did end with, I see you back there. He ended with, "He has made me glad." I thought, okay, good. You got, you know, leave us with some resurrection. But yes, that is a part of it. And we lost Sammy this year. You lost your mom this year. You know, a lot of people have been touched by it. I got to take my dad back to the endodontist tomorrow, and let's try it again. What we went through last week. And I'm like, "Mom, how are we going to do it?" You know, we're going to give him something to settle him down because we can't do this a second time. And Mom even said, "I'm not worried about a thing." I'm like, "Okay, good. I will tap into that current of faith I needed," because that was kind of hard what we went through last week. But it also makes me be patient with him, because I think, well, I don't know. You know, we went around the room. I just showed those pictures, and I had everybody say something. And when Dad is, he's used his linguistic skills enough over the years that when you first hear him talk, he sounds lucid. That's why I said, "Bless the food," and he knows how to do that. He blessed the food, and it was good. Him saying something, I could tell, well, he doesn't know who anybody in this room is. He knows who I am. He doesn't know who they are, and he doesn't know what to say. And we respected him. We let him, you know, say his thing, but I thought, I won't hear that again on this side. I won't hear his voice say something, you know, Dad had a certain gravitas to his voice, whatever, like, this is a different time now. And I'm not trying to be maudlin about it. I'm just saying it is what it is. And I'm sure you had to process going through your first Thanksgiving without her. And, you know, I remember the Christmas day, wasn't Christmas day that you lost your dad? And right after Linda Curtis had just called me, she had just lost her dad. So it's a very real part of life. It is life. And so, yeah, sing "I'll Fly Away." It doesn't mean we're going to do it right now. And, you know, if we're the generation that changes that, then so be it. But I have learned I don't want to just keep saying I'm going to live a long time. I want to say I want to live a long time and keep all my faculties and have my mind or whatever. And I'm not judging my parents. I'm saying I would say that in front of them. You know, even Mom will say to me, "I'm so glad you're doing things for your health, you know, because you're going to need it later." Like, exactly. Right. So, that, you know, just to say, I want to live to 120 years. No, I don't want to sit the last 30 of it in a wheelchair somewhere. I want, like, if I'm viable, which I believe that I will be, and I think meditation and nutrition and exercise, all that is a part of it. I even read a study this week. I'm not some big major weightlifter, and I've cheated some lately. And, you know, it's the holidays. I've eaten some. I mean, they had banana pudding last night, and Ken made a coconut cake. And I'm like, you know what? What am I going to do? I'm not going to sit there with all his relatives and go, "No, I'm not eating." I'm like, I'm not going to be that guy. You know, when his niece says, "If you had some of my banana pudding," I'm like, "You are the queen of banana pudding." Because that's what you do. But I also read a study just this week that even just light weightlifting cuts your chances of stroke and heart attack nearly in half. Just something, just even working with light weights. So there's so many things you can do to just push back a little bit and to say, let's try to, you know, let's go as long as we can. If 120 is the potential, let me try to get as close to that as I can. And at this point in my life, I believe it's possible. I think I'm healthier at 60 than I was at 50. Okay, that's, you know, let's believe in some possibilities. But also, I'm saying all that in light of this to say there's some things that just don't matter. You know what I mean? You look at people who were here 20 years ago that were involved in all their drama, whatever, they're totally gone. It's like it doesn't matter what they did. Do you know? It's like they came and they fought with other people for a while, and then they left, and the world kept spinning. You know? Yes. What Francis said, the deal with my grandfather was a confirmation that, like, life goes on. And that's right. He probably feels more alive to me right now than he has in many years. I believe he's in an enlightened state. My grandfather wouldn't be comfortable with me coming out if he was on this side. That would have been very hard for him to get his head around. But I know I've told you the story too many times, but when I had that, it was not a dream. It was a visitation of my four grandparents. And when my grandmother looked at me and said, "Jim Earl, on that side people think that kind of stuff matters, but on this side it doesn't matter at all." After that, after Addie Mae told me that, I was bulletproof. I was like, I don't care what you, like, my grandmama already told me I'm okay. And you become aware, I mean, they don't play hymns at Starbucks. I'm looking at my screen, the word abide. Na, 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 na. What? They're playing Abide with Me at Starbucks while I'm looking at the word abide, thinking about Granddaddy, and it's his favorite hymn? What? Now I'm looking around, there's, you know, homeless guy on the floor. I wish I could tell somebody I'm having nearly an out-of-body experience as I drink my iced coffee. I'm playing it off, but a window just opened to the other side, and life is still going on. It's not, yes.
Thank you.
Y'all stop it. We're not going there. It's coming here. Isn't that what John said at the end of Revelation? I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down as a bride prepared for her husband. And my whole life, I was taught, get out of here. We're going to get out of here. We're going to get out of here. No, it's all coming here. And yes, the more you look, with some of these Buddhist monks that meditated for years and ended up levitating and doing that kind of stuff, well, they were tapping into what Jesus did after the resurrection. He's walking through walls and that kind of stuff. I know it sounds out there, but I'm telling you, you're doing things on a molecular level when you meditate, and you get into a secret place where the other trivial stuff that's not going to matter in the big picture of things, it doesn't matter to you now. Yes, ma'am. We're the second coming. It's not an event. It's us. Absolutely. When somebody says, do you believe in the second coming? Yeah. Yeah, because I believe in me. My God. That's one reason I'm old school when it comes to loving Christmas. I was listening to in my playlist some of those Charles Wesley, like "Oh Come All You Faithful" and "Hark the Herald." They're beautiful lyrics of those things, you know. Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see, hail the incarnate deity, pleased as men with men to dwell, Jesus our Emmanuel. Like that's, oh man, I love that. I'm not, that's amazing. But it means something to me now much more. It's like Revelation is like being a detective and you start seeing all these clues. You go, oh, the baby was laid in a manger because, you know, in Italian you say mangia, mangia. It's like it's that Latin root of mange, M-A-N-G-E-R, it's eating. Well, Jesus, as an adult, says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you get. And see, we thought it was about communion. I remember clear as a bell walking down Spring Street before I started Metron. You know, I honored every one of those Sundays that we did communion. Those were beautiful. That's where we were at the time. Those were beautiful and necessary transition points for us. And those of you, I know y'all did it a lot. I know Tony, when he was here, he and Wayne did it a lot. I mean, I respect all of that. People who honored what we believed was the body of Christ, and we did that. And I never thought about not doing it. But when I'm walking down Spring Street, nearly to the varsity, and I'm not thinking about communion, and when Spirit speaks to me, it starts with, you know. I always hear that tone in the voice, you know. And it's never from a conversation I've been having, at least that I'm aware I'm having. You know, communion wasn't about bread and wine. Like, who said that? And I saw the whole thing. I thought, oh my God, we're aiming way too low. And we're obsessing over something that he's not even talking about now. We had to do it. It had to be part of the journey, no doubt about it. I believe every one of those Sunday afternoons had to happen. I totally believe that. But now I understand, you know, when I can come in before the service starts, and I've got people that I know are in covenant with me, for lack of a better term, and I can just say, can I vent about this, please? Charles, make sure this isn't on the, make sure my mic's not on, I want this going on the, and I can say a thing, you know what, you're eating my flesh and drinking my blood. You're saying, I know who you are, and in a few, I'm going to let you say your stuff about your frustration, because you're human, and then in a few minutes, we're going to hear God come out of your mouth. You know, people that don't know you can't bob and weave with you like that. Right. But those rivers are coming together. Yes. Oh, my God. Let me finish with this one. But this very famous Vietnamese monk who says, people usually consider walking on water or in thin air a miracle. But I think the real miracle is not to walk either on water or in thin air, but to walk on earth. Every day we are engaged in a miracle which we don't even recognize. A blue sky, white clouds, green leaves, the black curious eyes of a child, our own two eyes. All is a miracle. Now look, I don't want to take away the miraculous from you. If you need healing or whatever, I mean, Doc, I don't know what the latest is about Jackie. But, you know, I know she's Jackie Harper. I went to see her in the hospital. So much bad stuff had just happened to her. Broke her arm, shoulder, heart attack. As she's telling me the whole thing, she said, but outside of that, everything, we both started laughing. I said, oh, my God. It was like Job saying, all my children just been killed and blah, blah, blah. But outside of that, it's good. And Wellington's Memory's aunt or uncle just passed, and then his brother-in-law is in transition. Or not in transition, but in what you need? Oh, I'm good. Thank you, bud. I'm fine. He's trying to find me a tissue. I'm fine. Don't even get me started on that one. But anyway, I don't want to take away, you know, when you need healing. I mean, I'm not trying to take that away from you. But what I think happened to some of us, we looked so much for the supernatural on the other side that we missed all that was happening. Like we couldn't even appreciate. I've seen these trees change that I can remember 55 times. I'm shocked. I mean, driving over today, I just wanted to pull my car over and just go, oh, my God. And yesterday, I'm trying, you know, you see them and you try to take a picture with your phone and it doesn't capture it. You know, it's like, no, I wish, how could I make people see what I, there was a sidewalk I was walking down that it was kind of going downhill a little bit. And the trees lining it just made this archway over it. It looked like you were going into this fiery tunnel of these, it was just breathtaking. And I photographed it. And I was like, no, that's not it. It doesn't. It doesn't pick up. It's like it was just, amazing. I think, am I going to just get more blown away by everything with every year until finally I just dematerialize and become part of the universe? I don't see any division between me and that. And I know this sounds new age spacey, but you're looking at it and you're thinking, I am that tree. That tree is a part of me. We all came out of the same, we're all made out of the same stardust. Whether you call that Let There Be Light or the Big Bang Theory or whatever, it's all, and you start, when the veil is taken away, which often comes through meditation, you start seeing, oh my God, I am surrounded by miracles. And people think you're just being, you know, over the top by thinking everything's, you're speaking with everything in a superlative, like this is so great. But it really is. And when you look at other people who don't see it, they're absorbed with their own depression and their own whatever, and they're like sleepwalking through life, and you think, I don't know, how can I show you the miracles that are just everywhere and that you are a part of it? Yes. What Francis says, when you realize time, everything has heightened importance. Because it's still emotional. Even, you know, they're alive, but it's still, you know, that's a natural rite of passage when you lose a loved one. And so you do have to be aware of carpe diem. I've got to seize that day. I've got to, you know, we said this is the day the Lord has made so many years, it just became white noise to us. We don't even think about what we're saying. But it's like, no, this every day really is a miracle. Even the ones that are, I knew exactly what you meant, not only when you said about feeling alone on Thanksgiving, I had already thought about you. I already thought, well, I bet it's probably a different day for, but there's nothing I can say to you. I'm like, well, we're all, that's a natural thing that you felt. This is a different Thanksgiving. Doesn't mean it was a bad one. It just means it's different. As a human being, I hear you. I acknowledge it. If I just hit it, send a heart back, don't underestimate it. I'm saying, no, I know exactly what you mean. And I get that. Because you abide. That's my, back to the original thing, that's the point. It's like, if I own the home and a window gets broken, I've got to replace that window, but I'm still here because I abide. So he who dwells in the secret place, Shaddai's shadow, God weans you off of his breast, but he's still, the higher power is still there to shelter you, smuggling you in to his secret place. Because there are things, there are secrets he's telling you that he can't tell everybody else yet. Whatever was odd or offbeat about you that caused you to be a seeker, good. Good for whatever that thing was in you that made you listen to some preacher somewhere and say, that can't be right. That can't be right. So good for you. I know what mine was. I know what shaped my paradigm. Whatever yours was, good. Yay. Embrace your oddness. Because what it means is God smuggled you in. Man, talk about making you feel special. You are, I mean, God could get arrested for smuggling you in. God's breaking the law. That's what Doc Sheila said about Freddie's word. You said, because you texted me later, you said, well, you know, in the you didn't use all these words, but in the Council of Jerusalem, that's what they decided. Well, they're not going to have to become Jews first and then Christians, because those Jewish believers thought that, well, no, you got to go through Moses' law first. Yeah. So there were people being smuggled in. That's why you can't judge things you don't understand. Why is that person getting so blessed? You don't know. God smuggled him into a secret place, and you can't touch him. You can't touch him. And you talk, you know, there's such a, I got to shut up, but there's such a appetite for superheroes now. Every one of these superhero movies become instant blockbusters. Remember back in the 80s when Batman came out and it was like such a shock, it was such a big blockbuster. Now they have, they have two or three of them a year. And just, they're huge. Every one of them's huge. What's his name? The guy that started Spider-Man. He just passed away. Stan Lee. Can you imagine the universe he's created? Because he created Black Panther. You know, he's gone on to another dimension now. And there's all this. Why are people so drawn to things like Comic-Con and that kind of stuff? Because there's something in us that says we want to be, there's got to be more to us than this. There's got to be. Yes. Yes. Well, let me end with this. That's the great thing about the Oz parable, because wanting the brain, wanting the heart, wanting the courage, it was great. But the real thing about the story was there was no place like home. And it doesn't mean you have to settle for home. It means home already was in Technicolor. Do you know what I mean? You already had ruby slippers on. You just never knew it. And that's what, to bring meditation into, I think meditation removes the barriers till you start saying, oh, I already have everything I need. Yeah. Let's stand. Wow, y'all were chatty today. Oh, wow. Yeah. All right, because the lateness of the hour, I'm not going to do the official ending. You know what to do. If you have a check, make it to JESM, and they'll receive it back there. If you have cash, you might want to, if you want to bless Marshall, you can do that. Just take a minute and absorb the holiness of this moment. I'm reminded of the scripture in Malachi that says, then they that reverence the Lord spoke often together, and a book of remembrance was kept. Our words today have been transcribed, and now we make our abode in them. Peace. I love you.